Jayhawk Game Day on Sports Radio 810 WHB is presented by Bob Hamilton Plumbing, Heating, AC, Router, and Electrical. Better call Bob. 888-4-BOB. Remember the 913.
Welcome in the Jayhawk Game Day here on Sports Radio 810. I am Joshua Briscoe, and we do have basketball to talk about today, as you will hear the Big 12 SEC Challenge right here on Sports Radio 810 later this afternoon whenever KU tips off. But man, what a week it has been for the Kansas Jayhawks. We have a whole lot of things that we will break down. We will talk to a couple of the people closest to the program covering it every day. Matt Galloway and Michael Swain will join us. Galloway at 12:30, Swain at 1. And we'll hear from them about all of the things that have been going on, as they've been obviously very, very close to everything that's been going on this week. Plus, really soon here, later on in this segment, we'll play, if you missed Bill Self's College Game Day sit-down with Reese Davis, I just listened to it and it was really interesting. I don't throw that around lightly for college, really any coach doing a sit down on TV. Usually the goal there is to answer the questions but not say very much. Bill Self gave some really interesting, genuinely interesting things in his sit down today. And so, again, eventually we will talk certainly some about KU and Tennessee whenever it tips off here again at 3 on 810, the game out in Lawrence, obviously. But College Game Day's out there. Talk to Bill Self. We'll hear from him in a second as well. But this is a game that Kansas should be able to handle just fine without McCormick, without DeSosa. Obviously, McCormick out for 2 games, DeSosa out for 12. And we were live right after the game for Almost Entirely Sports this week, right after KU and K-State went final. I prepared a big Chiefs show. We were going to talk about the Chiefs for like 2.5 hours, all the way up till midnight, and the game wasn't interesting enough for more than a mention, honestly. And then those last few minutes unraveled. I just crumpled up all of the papers. By papers, I mean Google Docs. And I just selected a bunch, hit backspace, and then started anew, because it was that kind of, oh man, this is the new thing, huh? This is taking over the show tonight, and really, this week it's been interesting to see it all unfold. And so we don't need to relitigate every single element of it, right? But in the suspensions that were doled out, and specifically from Kansas' perspective, it's Jayhawk Insider here, Jayhawk Game Day, Jayhawk, it's both of them. It's both shows all at once. We can talk about KU specifically, because like I don't know if I'm thrilled about the dude who comes off the side in street clothes to hop into the fight not being suspended at the same rate as Silvio DeSosa, but it's you know, he will actually be inactive longer because the suspension doesn't start until he's medically cleared, so. At least there's a very good chance he'll be out longer than that. And so that's not really where I care to go today. DeSosa getting 12 games whenever K-State is game 11 kind of checks out. I think that that was very much an element of it. But I also think that if he doesn't lift up a chair, which he drops on his own volition, not that that's great, not that that whole scene is great because he dropped it on his own, but he did. If he doesn't pick up the chair, probably gets 8 also. I'm guessing that everything would cap out at 8. Love would have gotten 8. DeSosa would have gotten 8. McCormick gets 2. Whatever. But that image of Silvio DeSosa that was going around the entire internet these last few days is powerful and damning. And so, I obviously with all of this, and then really like, what we saw in Allen Fieldhouse against K-State was like the second wildest thing that's happened in that building this year. I was there whenever Snoop Dogg had acrobatic dancers on poles and a money gun. I mean, it this has been a wild season. Last year they lose the Big 12 streak, and you have all of the other stuff with the Sosa, all of the Adidas stuff. Like, it's just been a very tumultuous time for Kansas. And if we are we ready to go, Byers, on Bill Self from College Game Day? I want to make sure we have a chance to hear some of this in his own words, because obviously they talk a lot about they don't call it this, but I will continue to call it the Sunflower Throwdown. And there's some unpacking to do in there. And Self, you know, he signs off on some of the decisions made and all of that. I'm a little surprised, for what it's worth, on the suspension front, that more people weren't suspended for longer. But we talked about this whenever the suspensions came down on AES one night, that if they would have literally suspended everyone involved with that fight just for a game, the Big 12 SEC Challenge would have shut down. And the funny thing there is, if you're thinking about it as a business decision, of course the NCAA doesn't want to, like, make, you know, the KU run with six reserves, starting in one guy off the bench in a game that's televised on ESPN. But for all of the moralizing that the NCAA does in terms of, like, oh, we're just trying to, it's about the student athletes, you want to hold everybody to a higher standard and all that stuff, that all falls a little bit flat in terms of, like, hey, this should be about more than you being able to put out a good televised product. But it's not. You can just see through that mirage, and it's fine. I'm not surprised that the NCAA didn't want to, again, totally nuke KU and K-State's Big 12 SEC Challenge games. And again, for KU, this game's on ESPN. And I don't love it just because of the double standard that the NCAA constantly sets for itself, but I understand that it's happening. Anyway, I want you to hear a lot of this in Bill Self's own words, because it might be genuinely the most interesting, like, 8 minutes that I've ever heard from Bill Self. He's sitting on the floor at Allen Fieldhouse, talking to Reese Davis, being interviewed by Reese Davis, and there are some moments of, if not stubbornness, just a little bit of, like, a, hey now, I'll give you this much ground, but not that much ground, from Bill Self. There's some looking back to earlier in the season. It's really interesting. So here's Bill Self. You may have missed it earlier today. Here's Bill Self talking to the guys on College Game Day.
Joining us now here on the court, the head coach of the Jayhawks, Bill Self. Bill, as you look at that video, one of the many things that struck me in the aftermath, you're walking off the court right there.
Yeah.
The Sosa's close to you. What's going through your mind as you're walking off the court?
Well, it was, it all happened so fast, you know, and video, you can slow it down and study it in real time. That was just something that escalated in a span of 2 or 3 seconds. And my first thing, what is going on? I was very happy that, you know, we had 5 staff members in the middle of it, making sure or trying to make sure it didn't escalate more. But it was an awful look. It was an awful representation of who we are, and certainly we're not going to run from that. We got to somehow use this and to be better for it moving forward, even though the appearance of that happening immediately does not seem to be clear, but I know we will. But the thing about that situation, and I said that had nothing to do with competition. Mm-hmm. That had nothing to do with intensity. That had nothing to do with any of that. That was a situation where pride, ego, frustration set in, and then we saw how it could escalate, and certainly an embarrassment for all parties.
The Sosa suspended for 12 games by the Big 12, but your suspension is indefinite. What are the chances that the suspension exceeds what was handed?
I don't know yet. I spoke with my father yesterday, and he said, well, son, usually when I've had crisis situations like this through my place of employment, usually you may see it a little differently 2 or 3 weeks from now than the way you see it today. So I'm going to be patient and see how things transpire and see how people react to what's happened. I know that my group is crushed. Silvio's crushed, and I'm not going to back off one bit that Silvio's a great human being and a great kid. I am not going to make one excuse for him or for us and what transpired the other day, but I will do what's best for us. And I hope what's best for Silvio is also connected with what's best for us. And I believe that very well could be the case, but I won't make a definite decision now.
Those who say that the penalties, particularly those outside of Silvio, were too lenient, what do you think?
You know what? I think that everybody is entitled to their opinion. I think that even though my opinions may be different, I think the arbitrator, the Big 12 Conference, stepped in and did what they thought was in the best interest based on, from a neutral's perspective. You know, at the time that it occurred, I could say everybody that's played, you're done. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how you feel. That's not real. I know that I feel badly for David, because David went from being a guy that was a peacemaker to being a guy that was escalated when other members got involved. But you know, I heard what Seth said earlier. I totally disagree in that there was. I don't believe even though video evidence isn't conclusive. I do not believe that there was anything done by David other than coming into the situation with a very aggressive nature, which could have escalated, but it did not. So I personally thought the penalties were fair, but I'm also seeing it from my perspective, and I know other people are entitled to their opinions.
To be fair, it did look as if he took some swings when he initially went in and was aggressive.
I don't know. I looked to me as he was standing over him and a guy was laying on the ground, and I don't know that his body ever got close enough to ever come close to making contact.
Okay. You say that it's important to do the right thing for the program, and there's a term, you know, in basketball, self-scouting. No pun intended, obviously. When you scout,
is that the best joke you're gonna
have? No, it's not. It was not. It's not even actually intended as a joke. As you evaluate where this program is, in terms of, while unrelated incidents, but all the things that you faced in recent years, whether it's off the court issues, shoes, NCAA, this. How do you evaluate where the image of this program is right now?
Well, I think the image of the program has taken a hit. In recent memory, without question. I think that's a fair question to ask. I do know this: when you talk about image of a program, in large part you look at individuals, you look at kids, and of course you look at the staff. The staff, myself, is implicated in the NCAA potential allegations, or the allegations that are potential infractions with what transpired through individuals that worked with Adidas. We know that. I know the truth on that, and I hope the truth prevails. But everybody's entitled to an opinion about that, because there is evidence linking us into it, without question, through text messages or whatnot. I know that, I own that. And so our time will come. Not one player on our roster is involved directly with that, including Silvio De Sousa. Silvio, and then, you know, obviously up until this point, the most recent thing that brought attention was Snoop Dogg here. I'm personally a fan. But the things that transpired during his show that many, including me, perceived to be not appropriate for a family event, I don't believe it was Snoop Dogg's. I don't believe it was his fault. I don't believe it's his responsibility. I think that it was something that was arranged by our administration that thought would be handled maybe a little differently, and it wasn't. Our players didn't have one thing to do with that. Our players had something to do with this the other day. That's a negative cloud. I, my staff, hold the responsibility of the cloud, but it's certainly not players. Nobody's got better people in their program than we do.
So what is your plan to lift that cloud? Excuse me. And if you're going to get rid of the cloud, what is your plan to do so?
To remove
the cloud that you say is on the program.
I don't know that it's something that happens overnight. I don't believe it is at all. I think it's something that happens over time. Hopefully, with the completion of an investigation, I hope that could play a role in that. May not. We'll have to wait to see. But the biggest thing that we can do is put ourselves on a platform where people see us doing things right and see who we are, rather than seeing these things that are unexcusable that have occurred that certainly obviously put that cloud. I don't feel as strongly in some ways. I think right now, we haven't caught a break, but we brought that on ourselves. But the black cloud, this program's as solid as it ever has been. The thing that I think is in coaching, you go through peaks and valleys. Everybody does it. And we've been in a valley. And I don't think it's a valley that we can't get out of or climb out of. And I believe wholeheartedly, or if I didn't, I wouldn't want to lead this program any longer, because I'm responsible for being the caretaker of this historic tradition, as you guys have already described, more so than anybody else at this present time. And whoever follows me will be responsible for that. And so I believe that the ship will be righted. I know that we've gone through tough times before. I know we'll go through tough times in the future. But as far as the people in place and the foundation, our program is rock solid.
Bill, I appreciate you coming out here and doing this. I know it's not always that easy to do, and I appreciate you taking time and doing this with us.
That's Bill Self on College Game Day this morning. I mean, there is some packed stuff in there. Seriously. I don't even know where to begin. So let's rattle off a few things really quick before we have to take a break and talk to Matt Galloway. First of all, I'd be genuinely straight up stunned if he extended the suspension for Sylvia DeSosa. He said he doesn't know right now. I understand why he would say that, but I would be stunned. I would also consider it unnecessary at this point. He didn't kill a guy. Also, he didn't even bring the chair down. Like, listen, it's bad. You know what? Here's where I want to start, actually. Backpedal. I frequently attempt to do this, and I think Bill Self just did it impeccably for 8 minutes or whatever in that clip. You can explain behavior, and you can explain situations, and you can explain a conundrum that you're in. You can explain things without inherently excusing them. And I think Self did a pretty good job there of saying, hey, here's what happened. Here's how I feel about Silvio DeSosa. Here's what happened with Snoop Dogg. Here's what happened with Adidas. And you can doubt him or question the truthfulness if you want of any of those things, and that's your prerogative. So be it. But he explained things that were happening in all of those really unique instances and then proceeded to not excuse what DeSosa did, the Snoop Dogg late night situation, everything that happened with Adidas, just saying it didn't get to us. Let me explain how it didn't get to us. The image of the program even said, hey, I know that these things have been hurt in these ways, and it's not that we didn't even deserve it or didn't bring some of this upon ourselves or I don't understand. No, I get it. Here's what happened. Now what? I think there's a pretty good forward-looking attitude in all of that, where it again, especially for the DeSosa thing, like he was definitive in his defense of Silvio DeSosa as a person, and also definitive in his lack of desire to defend Silvio DeSosa's actions. You can do that. You can say, I think highly of this person and think that they did a very poor thing. And when it's a long pattern of actions, eventually, obviously, that chips away at your perception of somebody. But I think it's pretty clear there that that's not what's happening in the eyes of Bill Self. And I respect the willingness to stand up for a person and a player that you believe in, while also saying, yeah, he's out for 12 games. We're sure as hell not appealing it. Hopefully he'll be back for the tournament. I might suspend him for longer. He won't and shouldn't, for what it's worth. But you can make the case for the person and not make the case for an excuse. And I think that's really valuable. And I think a lot of times in sports conversations, in sports radio, in coaching, whatever, and really just frankly, in the world as a whole, we do a relatively poor job of allowing the difference between explanation and excuse making. You can say why you were running late and say, yeah, and I should have left earlier. That kind of thing. You can do all of that. I'm not asking to be excused for this thing I've done, or I'm not excusing this person for this thing that they've done, but let me explain what it was that happened so you have a better understanding of what led to this point. And then again, you can say, also, I don't think they're a bad person because of it. I think that's all really valuable. A couple other real quick things, and we'll unpack more of it later on as well. We'll unpack some of it with Galloway and some of it with Michael Swain later as well. Talking about the image of the program taking a hit, I thought was interesting that he would lean into that and admit that it's true. He said the program is still strong, but he's right. It has taken a hit. Adidas has been bad. The Snoop Dogg thing, like, you can, I'm sure that hurt it with some people. I don't think less of Kansas because Snoop Dogg was Snoop Dogg in Allen Fieldhouse. Like, I don't know, man. What'd you expect? Maybe the most interesting thing was, and he may have referenced this before, but saying, like, just saying out loud that there is evidence linking us, being Kansas, to Adidas and all of that Adidas stuff with texts and everything, openly talking about that, pretty interesting, like a kind of an interesting choice that, again, I think at this point doesn't hurt him any. Just say, yeah, we know that we've been connected to a bunch of this stuff. And then you follow that up by saying, true or not, follow that up by saying, none of the guys on our current roster have been connected to that in any way, including DeSosa, whatever. Again, I'm not fact-checking it, but as a strategy of what to talk about and how to talk about it, I think it's pretty interesting. And then also Self brought up Snoop Dogg and then said that he was a fan and then took the administration, walked over in front of the team bus, threw him right under it. Just, ba-dum-ba-dum. What was that? Oh, that was the sound of the administration. We just roll right over him twice. So, yeah, that's a administration thing. Anyway, I thought it was really interesting. It's the Jayhawk Game Day Insider pregame show. Listen, we're talking about KU, all right? That's important. Here's the other important thing. It's brought to you by Bob Hamilton Plumbing, Heating, AC, Router, and Electrical. You better call Bob, 888-4-B-O-B. Remember the 913, all right? You know that song. You hear it in your head all the time. 888-4-B-O-B. Remember the... What did you remember it, Byers?
913.
Boom! Got it. Matt Galloway's next. Welcome back to the Jayhawk Game Day here on Sports Radio 810. I am Josh Abriscoe. Show's brought to you by Bob Hamilton. You heard all the phone number. I don't even need to read it again, but if you do need to hear it again, it's Bob Hamilton Plumbing, Heating, AC, Router, and Electrical. You better call Bob, 888-4-B-O-B. Remember the 913. We are now joined by our friend Matt Galloway of the Topeka Capital Journal. You can follow him on Twitter at the Matt Galloway. He covers KU for Topeka Capital Journal. It would be weird if we had him on as, like, their Chiefs guy. Although, I mean, at this point, we're looking to Super Bowl. But that's not the case, because Matt will give us all of the things we need to know about Kansas. Matt, please don't let us down. This is all riding on you.
I think we're all Chiefs guys at this point.
That's true. That's fair.
I think you could have photographers on and they could talk about it.
I've seen a variety of people show up at Arrowhead. Just like, oh, I've never seen you here before. Oh yeah, they're in a Super Bowl. Sure, everyone is writing now.
Yeah, it was kind of the same way with KU and Bill Self's media availability yesterday, although it was for different reasons.
Yeah, and so I don't know. Did you have a chance to see him on, or I guess if you're there right now, you may have seen it in the flesh. But were you tuned in for the College Game Day interview?
No, I did not have a chance to catch it.
Okay, well, so he said it's all DeSosa's fault and they expelled him from the program. That's not true. That's not true. I'm sorry.
Sounds kind of newsworthy. Probably should have been watching that one.
It would have been. No, but I thought it was really interesting, and you can – we literally just played it, so everyone listening now has heard that and my thoughts on it. So we can step back to everything else that he said this week and what we've talked about this week, because this has been – it's been a hell of a week, Matt.
Yeah, he described it as five to seven seconds where basically everything that could go wrong did go wrong, and it really feels that way. I kind of described it the other day as, you know, if it was a steal and the block, then that might have been local news.
Mm-hmm.
If it was De Sosa, you know, standing over a guy and, you know, the K-State player Antonio Gordon coming in and shoving him out of the way, that probably would have been, you know, national news at some places. But then you have Silvio throwing punches, then it maybe makes the New York Times, and then you have him picking up the stool and it's an international incident. So everything just completely got wild and out of control in the span of 7 seconds. But since then, I mean, for what it's worth, I feel like KU and K-State, you know, the words that Bruce Weber and Bill Self said after the game, Silvio's apology and Bill's news conference yesterday, and I'm just only assuming what he said on game day today, all kind of strike the right tone, and they're doing their best to kind of contain what's been a kind of a fallout of a disastrous kind of 1 minute period.
Yeah, and I would say that the one thing from Self today is, this is not the exact perfect word, but this word has a little bit of a negative connotation that I don't mean for it to here. But Self was like a little bit defensive, again, like in a kind of maybe protective in a way of De Sosa today that I thought was pretty interesting. And he's a little bit of that. But today, like, you know, he went out of his way to say that he, you know, still 100% believes in Silvio De Sosa as a person and stuff like that. And I think that he's been on, like you said, the right track, striking the right tone throughout all of this. He also acknowledges, you know, that this has been a bad look. And I love the sort of phases of escalation. We don't need to rehash every single thing, but was there a moment for you that you went from, you know, that's to unpleasant, to concerned, to, oh no, this is going to be a whole thing? Was it a punch? Was it the chair in the air? Was it something before that?
Yeah, it was probably when the punches were thrown for the first time, because, you know, we've seen this against KU before. We've seen teams, you know, just this year.
This season.
Yeah, we've seen teams steal the ball from KU when KU's up 50 or whatever and try to score a late layup. And, you know, I think there is an alternate universe where Silvio had that block, one of the best blocks you'll see, and then just walked away.
Yeah.
And that was the perfect encapsulation of this rivalry.
Yes.
K-State down 20, tried to get a layup. KU, which had let its guard down, just blocks it into oblivion. And that's the lasting image of this rivalry.
Yep.
Instead, you know, I had a feeling when that happened, I thought, okay, that was a huge moment for Silvio in what's been kind of a lost season for him. I thought in the second between that and him towering over him, I thought, he's going to tower over him. He can't leave well enough alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why I thought that. I think it might have been just because he's had so few highlights this season that, you know, not only did this K-State player try to, you know, put him in a clown suit, I guess, on national television at the end of a game that was well decided, but Silvio basically had a highlight for the first time this year. And I just thought, if I were in his position, I might have a hard time not trying to rub the guy's nose in it.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened. But to me, it escalated when the punches were thrown.
I think that's a great point, though, that if the block is, you know, sent into the stands, and then maybe he gives a little look over his shoulder as he walks back down the other direction, that is in the video. Like, that's in the pregame hype video forever, because it's a great moment. And now it will not be in any of those unless, I don't know, maybe enough time passes that the absolute scandal of it all finally simmers down a little bit. But it really shifted. The tone of that shifted in a huge way very quickly.
Yeah, and I think what you said about Bill being defensive of Silvio, I think that came across yesterday, too. I mean, he used the word, he's ours, or he used the phrase, he's ours, and I'm proud that he is.
Hmm.
And I thought that was noteworthy. I also thought it was very noteworthy that he said of the three things that KU has had over the last year, really as kind of a black eye, the Snoop Dogg concert at Late Night in the Fog, he said that was administrators.
Yes.
The NCAA stuff, he said that was adults, and some people might say that's us, but that's going to be determined, but that wasn't players. He said this was players, but it's going to be basically the lasting image of this program for a long time. I think it's going to be the lasting image of this team, at least until the NCAA tournament. You know, nobody was talking about college basketball nationally until this happened, and for better or worse, now KU, I feel like there's such a year of parity that I feel like, for better or worse, this is this is kind of KU's season nationally. All eyes are going to be on them in the NCAA tournament now. Now more than ever, casual fans are going to know KU fight and Duke lost at home. Basically, going into the NCAA tournament, that's going to be basically the lasting image of both of those teams and the primer that fans are going to have for these teams. So
yeah,
it remains to be seen whether or not this is a galvanizing moment for this team. They're going to be shorthanded today against Tennessee and against Oklahoma State. Bill really shrugged that off and said this isn't about us being shorthanded. I think it's interesting. I think KU, even though they're a double-figure favorite in this game, under normal circumstances, you think they would be against Okie State. But I think it's going to be an interesting two games, and it's going to be very interesting to see how they piece together these five-guard lineups you're going to assume they're going to have to go to at times.
Yeah, we're talking to Matt Galloway at Topeka Capital Journal. You can follow him on Twitter at TheMattGalloway. So, yeah, what are they going to do? I may get distracted by something and circle back to, the absolute scandal of it all. But why I say somewhat facetiously. But whenever you look at what they're going to be doing, specifically these next 2 weeks, there was a moment whenever the image of this, it will be in my head forever, of all of that is happening, and I can't tell if David McCormick is kicking someone or not. And Mitch Lightfoot is standing about 10 feet behind all of the action in a literal red shirt, just thinking, man, I hope this isn't what I sat out for. I hope we don't burn this at this point. If McCormick's suspension would have gone on longer, do you think there would have been any thought of Mitch Lightfoot losing his red shirt? And what do you see the next two games sort of looking like as they are down bigs?
To answer the first part of your question, I don't think they would have considered that. I think that is the biggest kind of like break the glass in case of emergency type of situation. They only have about 13 games left in the regular season now, and I think it would take something significant enough, like an injury to Udoka Azubuike, for them to go that route. It just wouldn't be fair to him.
Yeah.
I mean, for everything that he's done here for this school and this program, for them to say, okay, your senior year is essentially going to be 17 games or whatever, 18 games, and good luck with that. So I don't think that would happen. I think that it would take something kind of catastrophic for that to occur. Now, I think when Udoka Azubuike isn't in the game, and we've seen him in marathon performances, the first game of Billy Preston sitting out, they went to Udoka for way north of 30 minutes against Kentucky in that season opener.
Yeah.
We've seen him be able to do it, but it's times that are few and far between. I think he'll be called upon in these two games, in these 3 days, to really kind of try that again. But when he's out, whether it's foul trouble, which he's kind of limited this year, it's been a problem for him, but not so much this year. I think we'll see Marcus Garrett and Tristan and Aruna primarily play the five.
I mean, Marcus Garrett was playing point like 3 games ago.
Right.
That's, I mean, I understand what you just said, but you said it in my brain. Short circuit.
Keep in mind, we saw KU play Clay Young for significant minutes at the five against Syracuse, like a walk on.
So that's true.
James Sosinski is not walking through that door.
No, but it would be. I mean, he might get minutes if he did. That's just crazy.
Right.
That's, I mean, I don't know. I've joked many times that Bill Self loves Marcus Garrett maybe more than his own children.
And
certainly as much as one. And at this point, I think you could see why. And seriously, it was how many games ago that he was literally, like, he was playing point whenever Dotson was out. I was doing the pregame show for that game. Was that
Oklahoma?
It was Oklahoma. Yeah, it was literally 2 games ago. And today he's gonna get. Minutes
right.
at the four or the five. That's incredible.
Well, he's averaging a team high 4.4 assists, and maybe he can get that up to like 4.4 blocks over the next two games with McCormick out. So.
What's the most interesting story in your mind from that collection of guards that's going to happen today? I mean, there are a handful of names that you could go to first that wouldn't surprise me, but if I let you pick one to begin, where would you go?
If I can just erase my brain of everything that happened in the last 3 seconds of the KU K-State game.
Yeah.
I think that this season, one of the biggest storylines to me is Christian Brown, a local kid who is emerging as a true threat, a scoring threat, a 3-point threat. You know, he's got the kind of the skill set that quite frankly we expected to see from Isaiah Moss.
Yeah.
With the kind of hustle that Bill talked about over the summer as being the best equipped guy on the team to steal you some extra possession. he's had times where his confidence, I think, has faded, and he's kind of faded into the background. But that ever since the Villanova game where they lost, where he and Aruna really stepped up with Marcus Garrett injured, I think he's really been on an uptick. And I'm interested to see, you know, everyone's going to see more minutes, but I think he was in line to see more minutes anyway before any of this happened. And this is usually the time of year where Coach Self whittles down his lineup, and I think that, you know, you're really I advocated for it a handful of games ago that Christian Brown is playing himself into heavy consideration for a starting role. And I look at this and I think, you know, you watch the start of the K-State game, David McCormick starts. He lasts, what, a minute? Yeah. Then Isaiah Moss comes in. He lasts 90 seconds.
Yeah.
And Brown comes in for Moss, and he plays the rest of the first half because he's so beyond his years right now and beyond his ranking coming into this program. I think that he is going to be really fascinating to watch going forward. And the other answer would be Ochai. Mm. I thought Ochai was due for a big game against K-State. It didn't happen. I don't know exactly what's going on with him. He's still hitting at a good clip from three, but you know, in terms of his rebounding numbers and his output, it's not what I think a lot of people expected. You know, I talked to Curtis Townsend at the end of last season, and he said by the end of this year, and you know, as a junior and a senior, he expected Ochai to be the face of the program. That's not the case right now. He's really kind of just faded into the background, and I'm interested to see if that changes now that with so few hands on deck, if guys that are usually more reserved are going to be pressed into more aggressive roles.
So let's stick to the good story before we go to a couple of the kind of bummer ones, because with Christian Brown, whose name I'm always afraid that I'm going to say wrong literally every time, I'm reading Braun, but it's not it. That's fine.
That's why I got into print media.
you have an editor. It's great. Yeah. I don't. I have a dump button. The best I can do is a dump button. but with Brown, what is his realistic ceiling in your mind? And maybe it's his realistic ceiling by March, and then you can look farther down the road if you'd like. But in terms of this season, what's fair to expect him to grow into if things continue to go well?
I don't think Tuesday's game was the type of performance that I would label a fluke. Now, I would not call it something that I would expect to see from him every game. But I think it's fair, and I don't think it's limiting to say that that might be his ceiling. I mean, what did he hit? 6 threes in that game? I don't have it in front of me, but he went completely off. He played heady defense, and he got KU some extra possessions. I think that as a freshman, I think that that is his ceiling. And, you know, you look at it last year, Ochai had maybe the best run of 3 or 4 games, or, you know, that first chunk of games where he came in after they burned his red shirt,
yep,
where you looked at it and said, this is as good as I've seen a freshman play.
Yep.
I don't know that Brown can necessarily reach that level, but I do think that what you saw from him on Tuesday, I have no reason to believe that that was not, you know, just some Kansas kid going off in the Sunflower Showdown. Like, I think he can do that today. I think he could do that Monday. I think he's capable of that in the game, so I would say that that's probably his ceiling.
Yeah, and against K-State, he had 29 minutes, shot 7 of 15, but 6 of 10 from 3, and pulled down a couple of rebounds, 4 rebounds and 20 points in 29 minutes. The Ogbaji comparison is, I like that a lot, because it did feel a little bit like that, of like, oh, hey, this, huh, is this real? And then it happened, for, you know what, this might be real, but we can use that as an excuse to talk about Ogbaji for a second. It fizzled. I mean, it fizzled last year, and then this season, this off season, felt like a little bit of a. I don't want to say that there's a ton of pressure on Ogbaji at this point. I don't know if that's fair. Maybe it is, but an expectation of kind of a return to his best form, and it doesn't seem like we've seen any of that.
Yeah, and Coach Self will always say, like, I don't judge whether a player is playing well by if he's making shots. So, you know, you look at a game, the recent few games for Ogbaji, I think the last 6 games, he's been playing a lot better defense. He had 7 rebounds against K-State, and a lot of that had to do with the fact that K-State misses a ton of shots, but that still is well above his season average. And, you know, in his last 4 games, he's got 5 or more rebounds in 3 of them. But then you look at it, and he's only reached double-figure scoring in 1 of his last 6 games. So I think people expected him to be right there with Moss as, like, KU's not just their best, but maybe their only perimeter threats this year.
Yeah.
And that, you know, thankfully because of Christian Brown, they have another option, but that really hasn't materialized for those two guys. And when you look at the four-guard lineup that they've been deploying mostly, now that they're going to be starting, and I don't see them changing that when McCormick comes back, especially now with two bigs, you're going to need better production from Ochai. You're going to need better production from Isaiah Moss. And it's scoring. It's strictly scoring. You know, Ochai is 1-for-11 in his last four games from three. That's not good enough. That's not good enough for him to, you know, maintain a starting role. And no matter what kind of improved defense he's playing or improved rebounding or activity. So, you look at him and he has enough athleticism that you would think that he can really make some plays when he's not scoring. And to a certain extent, he does that, but he doesn't have a block since December 10th. So this is a guy that I think can utilize his athleticism even more. I'm still bullish on his future. You know, anytime you see a player do what he did as a freshman for that stretch, you know, I can't believe that he's going to be a bust. So he came out of nowhere, and he's kind of trending back toward what people expected of him when he came in. But at the very least, he's giving KU good minutes and improved defense in those minutes. And I think that when you have as few bodies as they have right now, it's kind of that's not to be understated.
So on Isaiah Moss, with the outside shooting and all of that, he seemed like the one guy that, like, had something cashed in. Do you expect there to be kind of a positive regression from him at some point where you do feel a little bit better about what he's able to do from the outside, or have your expectations changed for him?
I do, and I wonder if being a starter, if that's the route that KU goes, would actually, you know, help Isaiah Moss. The one game that he started against Oklahoma, he scored 20 points and hit six threes. I wonder if some guys are just wired to kind of perform better as a starter. I know you hear about guys coming off the bench as energy guys. It would seem like Christian Brown would be that kind of an energy type of shot in the arm guy. Maybe Isaiah Moss is a guy that just is so used to starting that maybe that's a benefit to him. I mean, I thought his season was starting to turn around when he scored 15 against Baylor, 20 against Oklahoma in back-to-back games. You know, he had 10 points, I think, in the first half of that game against Baylor that ended up being kind of a blowout loss for KU. But that 20-point game against Oklahoma was the third game in a five-game stretch where he had scored at least 15 points. But you look at his last few games, 17 points, then 0, then 2, 15, 20, 5, and 7. He's either on or he's way off. And, you know, I still think it's almost like the type of guy that he'll, if he misses a couple threes early, it just completely shoots his confidence. Yeah. You know, we've seen him against Stanford. We've seen him, against Oklahoma and even against Texas. KU will come out of a timeout and run a play specifically to get him a three. What I've been most disappointed in with him this year is it seems like, it's kind of twofold. He doesn't really seem aggressive when it would appear he has a semi-open shot, and a semi-guarded shot for Isaiah Moss is better than an open shot for some guys on the court. And to me, he doesn't seem like a guy that's able to hunt his own shot. Maybe he'll change the narrative on that, but look, his percentages are there. He's one-dimensional, but his percentages from three are there, and I just expect him to maybe now that he's going to be called upon, like Ochai, to have a higher volume, kind of really forced to have a higher volume. It's kind of incumbent on him to really increase his attempt numbers. And even then, I he was asked the other day, like, what does this offense need to do to get going? And his answer was, we need to find Dope more. So that's still the identity of this team. But I think, you know, everyone realizes he's got to step up from a scoring perspective. It's beyond what Bill says about, you know, guys can play well if they're not scoring. That's true, but he's supposed to be their scorer, and he's averaging 8 points a game, so in limited minutes. So he's definitely that narrative doesn't necessarily fit with him as much.
Matt, I appreciate it. You can follow Matt on Twitter at @TheMattGalloway. Read his work in the Topeka Capital Journal. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Jayhawk Insider here on Sports Radio 810. Also, maybe Jayhawk Game Day. I'm probably going to get it wrong every other time. It's fine. You would all get right, and what you can get right, you can go to Bob Hamilton. Bob Hamilton Plumbing, Heating, AC, Router, and Electrical. You better call Bob. That's 888-4-B-O-B. Remember the 913. Jug Game Day continues here on Sports Radio 810. Josh Briscoe with you. Josh Byers on the other side of the glass. You can stay tuned in here all the way up to 1:30, where we will then hand it over to KU. The game tips off at 3, all right here on Sports Radio 810. The Big 12 SEC Challenge is today. We'll take a look around some of those scores here in a little bit, but I know right now West Virginia is currently giving Missouri a bad time, is what I will say. It's 62-40 on ESPN. I don't have the rest of the scoreboard up right now. We'll give it to you before the handover to KU's pregame. The actual game today should be relatively straightforward, and we'll talk to Michael Swain of Fog.net here in just a little bit about it. But the conversation with Galloway, again, the Matt Galloway on Twitter, give him a follow if you want more KU in your life. The discussion about Christian Brown to Ochai Agbaji to Isaiah Moss in terms of where you feel like you can consistently rely on any of those guys for three-point shooting and really just, you know, shooting in general, but especially perimeter scoring, which is something that this team needed more of last year, needs more of this year, and really just every college team generally needs to be better at. You didn't expect it to come from Christian Brown this year. You expected Isaiah Moss to be more consistent than he's been, and you expect Ochai Agbaji to have a little bit of that energy that he brought whenever, like Matt said, whenever they burned his red shirt last year. So continuing to see how that goes, especially these next 2 weeks without McCormick out there, whenever they're playing all four guards and some five-guard lineups, there'll be a lot of very interesting things to be keeping an eye on over these next couple of games for Kansas. And a lot to keep talking about. Talk to Michael Swain of Fog.net whenever we come back here on Jayhawk Game Day on Sports Radio 810.
Jayhawk Game Day on Sports Radio 810 WHB is presented by Bob Hamilton Plumbing, Heating, AC, Router, and Electrical. Better call Bob. 888-4-B-O-B. Remember the 913.
Game Day here on Sports Radio 810. I'm Josh Briscoe. We got 30 more minutes of us, but then it's all KU after that as well today. Hand it over to KU's pregame coverage. The game between the Jayhawks and Volunteers tips off at 3. We're now joined by Michael Swain of Fog.net. That's 24/7 Sports' KU site. You can follow him on Twitter at mswain97. Michael, we've had an hour of this show already today, and a couple of times we mentioned that KU is playing Tennessee, but it hasn't really been the lead because this week has been a heck of one, Michael.
Oh my gosh! Like, I am so happy to have basketball back and to not have to talk about, you know, chairs being picked up, punches being thrown, uproar. You know, that creates so much extra news and it's interesting to talk about in the ramifications of it. But as of 3 o'clock today, I'll be happy to get back to just basketball.
Well, I'm glad that you amended there. Like, oh, I'm so glad to be able to talk about this game without all this other stuff too at the end, saying, well, at 3. Because, yeah, you're not free yet. You're not free of this week just yet. Because there's just been so much throughout this whole story. And I should have asked you this ahead of time, but did you have a chance to see Bill Self on College Game Day this morning?
I did. I was watching it live, and I must say, a really great performance from Bill Self in the game. He could have been – someone tweeted this, man, I wish I remember who it was, but Bill Self could have been a politician and a darn good one, and that is very true. His ability to – you know, you watch Reese Davis through the whole thing. He's acting real serious, you know, because it is a serious topic, you know, players fighting. But Bill Self and his ability to turn the serious questions and to give you an answer that you're like, oh – okay, that makes sense, where there's nuance to it.
Yeah.
You know, you think about the way he talked about Sylvia, right? And it's, you know, hey, he made a mistake. This is players. I can still love him, but I can also tell him, hey, man, you really did screw up. And I think that's the biggest thing that maybe is missed from this whole conversation is nuance. You know, you think about Fran Fraschilla, Dick Vitale after the game saying that Silvio should never play college basketball again. It's like, all right, let's take a deep breath.
Yeah.
Let's think about this. You know, he picked up a chair. He didn't do anything with it. He put it down, it appears, mm-hmm. under his own power and mm-hmm. willingness. Mm-hmm. And I thought that Rob Doster from NBC Sports did a really good job in one of his columns, you know, taking this from the perspective of Silvio, where it's like, you know, all of a sudden you're standing over a guy, you get pushed by a guy in street clothes.
Yeah.
In a split second, you're supposed to discern, wait, is this guy on K-State's bench? Is this a fan that's rushing me? Because you got to remember, man, I don't remember what year it was, but several years ago, there was a fan that was on the court, I think, when maybe K-State beat KU.
Yeah.
The details are a little fuzzy. But that's happened before, so there's reason for him to be like, oh, my God, is this a fan that's attacking me? So I think the biggest thing with this, you know, to wrap up the point, but it's all about nuance, right? And
yeah.
he didn't do anything with it. You know, David McCormick gets the 2 games. I think that's probably fair. And I think in the grand scheme of things, the suspensions for everybody, I think we're pretty fair and evenly split.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. The one thing from what Self said today about Silvio is that I wasn't, and I think he began to sort of touch on this a little bit earlier this week, but in the moment we didn't hear him go this route because he hadn't, you know, seen all the video yet or whatever. But I do think it's interesting and relatively important that he makes that kind of like, this was a mistake, but Silvio's my guy, and he's a good person, and all of that stuff. I think that that's a pretty important point for him to make because he didn't have to, and because you've seen guys end up in Self's doghouse where you don't hear the kind of statement that sounds that genuine in its belief that the player is still, you know, salvageable from a bad moment. And so I don't know if I was surprised to hear Self say it, but I did think that was noteworthy.
Oh, I definitely agree. And if you look at, man, a part of you has to feel bad for Silvio in a way, too. Just you look at his college career.
Yeah.
You know, he comes to Kansas for that 2017-2018 season. He helps bring Kansas to a Final Four. There's so much hype around what he could look like as a sophomore. Then that gets taken away from him by the NCAA investigation. Mm-hmm. He misses a season. And then this season, things aren't really going his way. He's not playing as much, not being as productive. The flashes of the potential aren't there as often. And then this happens. And you just think about all the equity Kansas has put, both in terms of public relations and financial equity. You think about the lawyers that are required to be hired in order to appeal some of the Silvio DeSouza stuff. You know, I think it does mean a lot that Bill Self, through this entire thing, through the NCAA investigation last year, through his struggles this season and into this incident, he has stood by Silvio's side. And I think that he could have easily wiped his hands clean and been like, you want to know what? Nah. Like, mm-hmm. you've caused us so much drama to begin with. Like, we're just going to cut bait. And instead, you know, he stood by him, and I think that speaks a lot. And I think about this. I wish I had the clip off the top of my head, but Nick Saban, in a press conference or in a speaker setting, said something along the lines of, you know, if one of his players messes up, why would he kick him off the team where then he doesn't have that structure and leadership to advance in life? And mm-hmm. I feel like this is one of those moments for Bill Self where he is saying, we're going to continue to keep this in the program. We're going to give you a second chance at this. You know, you're going to have the opportunity to play again. You know, Bill Self said it's an indefinite suspension. I doubt that he goes longer than the 12 games.
Yes.
He could, theoretically. But I think there's reason to believe Silvio DeSouza will be back next year. And it feels like Bill Self putting him under his arm and saying, we got you. Like, you're not leaving us. I think that speaks a lot for both, you know, about Bill Self and what he thinks about Silvio.
I know there are a lot of layers on this one, but and this might be the last thing on the fight. We'll see. But with the suspension, and we talked to Scott Chasen, also of 24/7, also of Fog.net, also had a column that I thought was excellent this week.
Yes.
But so you can check that out, Fog.net. What are you doing, everybody? All right, just go do it, okay? We talked to him about this a little bit yesterday. I tweet about this some, where clearly I think DeSouza's suspension is related to the fact that he got 12, and the next K-State game is 11 games away, and for mm-hmm. Love's 8 games, that doesn't actually start till he's medically cleared, so he's probably not there either. I imagine that absolutely played a factor, and I also think that that if he just doesn't pick up the chair, not only is there less of a suspension, even then I would think they'd be a little less worried about the K-State game because it wouldn't have become, as our friend Matt Galloway said a little bit earlier in today's show, an international incident the moment that the chair was raised over DeSosa's head. Do you buy both of those things or either of those things, that the K-State game being game 11 helped make it 12, and that it would have been significantly different if everything was the same except for the chair being raised up?
Oh, totally. Yeah, 100% on both of those. Starting off with the chair, yeah, if Sylvia doesn't pick up the chair, you think you'd probably get that game. In terms of precedent, that would be about what you'd expect. You know, he could then play in the K-State game, but I do think that played a role. And think about this, though. If Silvio did pick up the chair and they suspended him for 10 games, let's say, and he does get to play in Manhattan, oh, my God. Like, just in terms of the booing, like, you know, the arena there is already loud enough with when KU comes to town.
Yeah.
But to add that on top of it, if Silvio comes in and has a big play or makes a big shot, like, imagine that. Like, it would be pandemonium. You know, in the immediate aftermath, you kind of thought, how are they going to be able to play the game in Manhattan after this?
Yeah.
You know, how intense is that going to be, just in terms of not necessarily the players, but in terms of just the environment that will be there, how volatile it's going to be in terms of, you know, just the fan noise, what's going to be said. And, you know, the players going into it will be prepared and, you know, and know what's going to happen. But, man, that rematch, I think it's on a Saturday noon on CBS. That's going to be must-watch television just for the atmosphere alone.
Oh, 100%. I mean, my life has been about the Chiefs for, like, 9 to 10 straight months now. I have finally had a reason to circle a college basketball game on a calendar a few weeks in advance, because that game cannot get here quickly enough.
Oh, no. I'm super pumped for it. I think it's going to be one of those that goes down in Kansas lore. You think about the Marcus Smart return game for Kansas fans. This being the return game of the fight, having it be at K-State, KU will most likely win that game just because Kansas State is, you know, there's a valley between the two teams in terms of just talent right now with Kansas State's turnover over the past year. But, man, yeah, that's going to be one of the games of the season for KU.
So what about in the interim then? You look at Tennessee today and you look at these next two games against Tennessee and then Oklahoma State. No DeSosa, obviously, but then also no David McCormick for these next two games. What is the most likely way that these next two games play out in terms of lineup construction for what Bill Self is going to try to do here?
Man, I know we talk about, or maybe not us, but in terms of just general about Udoka Azubuike and his ability to play a lot of minutes. This season, it feels like, you know, he's playing a lot more. He's averaging, you know, 28 minutes a game right now. And I think going into the season, if you were to said, you know, over under 23 minutes a game for Doak, you'd probably take maybe the under on that. But he has been a workhorse for Kansas this year, and it's going to be that way for the next two games. And hopefully, you know, he's going to have a nice little break because Kansas plays Monday, then Saturday. So he's going to have a break after that Oklahoma game. But these next two games are going to be big on him. He's going to, you think about, you know, all the recovery afterwards, that's going to be a huge deal. I do expect Kansas to, you know, start with him and play him a ton. I'm interested to see what, in terms of rest, what Bill Self does. If he's going to do one of the things where you see in the NBA where they try and time it with media timeouts to minimize the amount of on-court time that he misses and maximize the actual real-world time that he gets on the bench. And when he does go to the bench, I think you're going to see probably, you know, Bill Self's security blanket, Marcus Garrett. He's going to be probably at the five, and you probably see Kansas double the post. Personally, me, Michael Swain, I would love to see Tristan Anaruna get some run at the five. When he originally committed to Kansas about a year ago, I wrote that I would love to see him. It wouldn't happen in Bill Self's system, but to see him at the five, just in terms of his length, shot-blocking ability, what he can bring. And we may get a little bit of that today. In terms of the trust that Bill Self has in Anaruna, I think you've seen that dwindle a little bit as of late, just in terms of how much he's played.
Yeah.
one of the criticisms you could have of Tristan is that he is a little too lax or, you know, relaxed when he's on the court. It looks like he kind of just floats around, doesn't necessarily have that tenacity that you would think like a Devon Dotson has, where it's, I'm going to go after you play after play after play. So maybe Enrun is one of those guys who gets the playing time today. But I think really you look at it, it's going to be Marcus Garrett that Bill Self's going to lean on even more.
He was playing the point 2 games ago.
I know. He is awesome. Marcus Garrett, like, in terms of you look at his trajectory, in terms of his Kansas career, as a freshman, he's kind of just the defensive stopper with Devontae Graham and Svee on that team. He's just kind of like the defense guy.
Yeah.
Then last season, it's like, oh, well, he's the defense and the passing guy. And then now it's like, well, now he's our ball handler, defense, passing, team leader. Like, he does everything right now. And he, in terms of just a player, in terms of growth, it's been awesome to get to watch over the past years. And it makes you wonder, you know, what is the limit for him if he does start making more threes? You know, he's only shooting 31% right now. But if he gets up into that 35, 36% over a stretch or even in the next season, I mean, you're talking about a darn good basketball player.
Yeah. We're talking to Michael Swain. You can follow him on Twitter at mswain97. Read all of his work on fog.net, which is through 24/7 Sports. Throughout the other, you mentioned his shooting. Throughout the team as a whole right now, there are a handful of pretty interesting storylines throughout the rest of the guards. There was a Christian Brown story that got swept away because there ended up being a chair story. But if I let you pick a starting point among the rest of those guards and say who has been most interesting so far this season or whose next few weeks will be the most interesting to you, where do you begin?
Oh, that's a tough question. I think you've got three candidates for me. I think Devon Dotson is one of them. I think Ochai Agbaji is one of them. And I think Christian Brown is one of them. If you look at the trajectory of Christian Brown, I think you'd say it's been exponential since the Villanova game. You know, before that, he wasn't playing a ton, wasn't doing the extra things that Bill Self has talked about him, you know, in terms of effort play, getting extra possessions. He's kind of exponentially grown. Devon Dotson, I think an underrated storyline for this season is his three-point shooting. You know, he's taking four threes a game, and he's only making 30% of them. I think that's a storyline in terms of Devon Dotson as the pro prospect. But I think in terms of what this team needs to reach its peak, I think it's Ochai Agbaji. I know you and Matt talked about that in the last segment, but I think for Ochai, it's not about the three-point shooting. I know everyone likes to get caught up with the shooting aspect of it for Ochai.
Right.
But I think for me, it's about the mentality. Because Ochai, you think right now, Ochai, he's okay shooter. He's shooting 36% on threes this season. That's not terrible. Mm-hmm. He shot 30% last season. Mm-hmm. So in terms of growth, it's there. And with Ochai, he's a streaky shooter. There was that 10-game stretch to start his college career in Big 12 play where he shot like 40-something percent from three on like four attempts a game. And then after that, he kind of struggled. And what you've seen this season is that, but just more variance. It's 4 or 5-game stretches where he's shooting the ball really well, and then all of a sudden he's not. And I think when you look at Ochai, it's the other thing. He needs to be a better passer. That's where I come down to.
Hmm.
You know, you look at Bill Self talked about it. Oh, man, what game was it? 2 games ago at home. But Ochai had some, against Baylor, some bad entry passes. I led with it in my post-game story. And that's where he needs to get better. Because if Ochai's turning the ball over and not making threes, then, I mean, on offense, what else is he bringing? Because he's not driving to the rim. He's only averaging, one free throw attempt a game. For someone as athletic and long as Ochai is, he should be attacking the rim, attacking the rim, attacking the rim, and letting the threes come to him as guys, as the space opens up because he's attacking and other guys are going to continue to attack. So I think in terms of what you look for from Ochai, it's all about the mental aspect. Is he going after guys? The defense will always be there just because of how long, athletic, and just ability to bounce he has. It's just the mental aspect. You know, is he going to close out on a 40% three-point shooter? Is he going to sag off just because the scouting report flips his mind for a split second? You saw that against Texas where he screwed up on a couple ball pick-and-roll defenses, didn't close out on the shooter, resulted in a couple made threes. So for Ochai, as much as everyone wants to get caught up on the threes because those are fun and those count for more points, I think it's those other things that he needs to do better in order for this Kansas team to reach its full ceiling.
So on that note, how many guys on this team right now do you feel comfortable with trying to get to the basket, like just having the ball in their hand and having a chance to drive?
First of all, Devon Dotson, Marcus Garrett, I think they can get there. They can get to the rim whenever they want.
Yep.
Marcus Garrett's ball handling this season has been superb. In terms of other guys, I think Christian Brown, maybe. He does at times get a little timid. He's like Ochai, where there are times where it's like, yes, drive, good job. And then there are other times where it's like, someone's closing out. Please, just for the love of everything, drive, get to the rim.
Please, God.
So definitely, you know, Marcus Garrett, Devon Dotson, Ochai Agbaji, Christian Brown a little bit, and that's kind of it, honestly. You know, Tristan Anarena can get to his left at the rim, but he doesn't play as much now in the 12th place, so that's not much of a factor. Isaiah Moss is not the type of guy that's going to try and get to the rim. He's more of a, I'm going to pull up and take a two instead of trying to get to the rim and finish. So, I mean, for as good as Kansas is inside the paint, they really only have two guys you're really confident in perimeter that are driving at the rim.
So the shooting thing with your angle on Agbaji there, I think, is really, really interesting. Whenever you look at Christian Brown and you look at Isaiah Moss and how streaky he's been and all of that, what is this team's biggest wholesale offensive issue at this point? It can be, you can make it specific to one guy if you want. It can be a team-wide thing. But if it's not what you just laid out with Agbaji, what is it?
I think it's the variance in three-point shooting. It's not on one person. It's the team as a collective being inconsistent shooters from three. Guys that on their night can make as many threes as they like. You think about Isaiah Moss, Ochai Agbaji, guys that can make tons of threes. It's the instance of, if all the guys aren't making threes, where are the points going to come from? And yes, Doak is great in the paint, and yes, Marcus Garrett is great in the paint, and yes, Devon Dotson is great in the paint. But three is better than two. And with the amount of threes that teams are shooting against Kansas, you know, that is definitely a storyline. Teams have gone out of their way, at least really early in the season. I haven't checked in on the numbers over the past week, but early in the season and through all of non-conference play and into Big 12 play, teams were averaging shooting almost as many threes as two against Kansas. So in terms of just pure math, Kansas is going to need to make more threes or get a ton of offensive rebounds and force turnovers to be able to close that gap. You think about a game like against Dayton in the Maui Invitational, where Dayton comes out and makes like 16 threes, I want to say, and they're in that game because they made so many threes. And for Kansas, they go in and shoot a high percentage, but because they're getting two instead of three and not shooting a ton of threes, it's one of those things where just the math allows teams to stay in it. And if you were to go look forward into March and you say, how does this Kansas team lose? I think it's one of those games where they catch a team that shoots a lot of threes, they make a ton, Kansas doesn't make a ton, and maybe you get some foul trouble or something else, but it definitely feels like a variance in three-point shooting for this team is definitely its Achilles heel right now.
Michael, I appreciate it. You can follow Michael on Twitter at mswain97, not 91, and you can read everything that he does at fog.net through 24/7 sports. That's going to do it for us here on the Jayhawk Game Day Insider Show. I combined them all for once. Brought to you by Bob Hamilton. Bob Hamilton Plumbing, Heating, AC, Router, and Electrical. You better call Bob. That's 888-4-B-O-B. Remember the 913. Keep it locked right in here to Sports Radio 810 all day long as we continue to get you ready for KU and Tennessee, which you'll hear right here on your home for the Jayhawks, Sports Radio 810 WHB.